Unfiltered.
I'm not sold. I'm sorry.
Unapologetic.
I'm not trying to talk about them.
Unlike anyone else.
But knowing y'all.
Y'all will probably make me.
This is the Stephen A. Smith Show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of the Stephen A. Smith Show, coming at you as I love to do every weekday morning, every weekday from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM, Mad Dog Sports Radio. Number to call up, as always, is 888-MAD-DOG-6. It's 888-MAD-DOG-6. It's 888-623-3646. 888-623-3646. Hope y'all had an absolutely wonderful and marvelous weekend. Hope you enjoyed your Easter Sunday, no doubt. A lot of stuff to get into. By the way, some NBA action. LeBron without Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic. Steph Curry returning to the lineup. Giannis making noise against the Milwaukee Bucks. That's certainly something to get into. Hour number two, Corey Close. Now, head coach for the reigning national champion UCLA Bruins in women's college basketball. She'll be on the show with us to start off hour number two, Bruce Burrow. Noted college basketball analyst extraordinaire will be on with us to talk to us about what happened this weekend and a preview of what's going to take place tonight in the national championship game between Michigan and UConn for the national title on the line. All of that is stuff that we have to get into, stuff that we should look forward to getting into. I can't wait to discuss it. You shouldn't be waiting to discuss it. But before I get into any of that, let y'all know I'm going to get into LeBron James and his Memphis comments because that made a lot of noise. I'm definitely going to get into Gino Auriemma and his behavior towards Dawn Staley after South Carolina whipped UConn in the national semifinal. That's coming up in just a moment. But first order of business is tonight's national championship matchup, Michigan versus UConn. Ladies and gentlemen, I owe the University of Michigan an apology. Over the national airwaves. I owe them an apology. I didn't see this coming. I knew that they were an elite basketball team. I knew that they were no joke. But I didn't see this. I mean, they beat Arizona's ass so badly on Saturday night in the national semifinal game. I don't know if the stock of Braden Burries and Jaden Bradley will ever be the same. I mean, that was an ass kicking. I don't want to hear about the final score. It wasn't close. Michigan dominated them from start to finish. 91-73 gave this no justice. Arizona was up by 29, 30 points. They whipped, Michigan whipped their ass. There's no way around it. I mean, they bullied them. They were more physical than them. They were on them like a pack of piranhas, just all over them. All over them. And Arizona looked nothing like one of the nation's top teams, which is what they looked like all year long. We expected this to be an epic matchup. It was nothing of the kind. It was nothing of the kind. They got whipped. And I'm looking at Michigan right now, and I only saw them really, in all fairness, like two or three times this year. And each time I watched them, I wasn't enamored with their guard play. I looked at them and I said, this guy, Elliot Cadeau, I will say that he had the best 5-for-17 shooting performance I've ever seen. Shot 2-of-14 at halftime. 2-of-14 at halftime and hit all three of his shots in the second half. Finished with 13 points, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, 4 steals. He was unreal. He was just a pest. Constantly in attack mode, had Bradley on his heels, and then messed up Bradley because he was making things happen so effectively that Bradley felt compelled to try and do the same, and ultimately he was pushing it and pushing it and pushing it to the point where he ended up having probably the most awful game of his career. Just an anemic performance, 4-6 from the field. All right, finishing with 13 points, 1 assist, just 3 turnovers. It looked like he had about 10 because he looked that erratic and he looked that rattled. Burries, he's supposed to be the other star in your cat. 4-16 shoot from the field, couldn't get anything going. This Catawaka is a man child for Arizona, no doubt. Real muscular, big, will shove people around. And to me, as far as I'm concerned, even though he only had 8 points, he was the only one that looked like himself. Everybody else on Arizona looked completely rattled. That's not the case for Michigan. This kid, Kadeau, can ball. Mara had a big-time game. 11 of 16 from the field. Okay? 26 points. 9 rebounds. 2 blocks. Sensational performance on his part. Michigan just looked like a man amongst boys. Merez Johnson Jr. with Mara, something to watch out for. And then I look at this cat, McKinney, coming off the bench, hit 6 of 9 shots, 2 of 3, or 4 of 6, rather, from three-point range, finishing with 16 points off the bench. Between him, between this cat, Namari Burnett, between Kadeau, even with Lindenborg suffering an MCL injury with his knee and messing up his ankle and barely able to give you anything, only attempted 4 shots for the game, only played 14 minutes. They still whipped Arizona's living you-know-what. Michigan should be the favorite for the national title tonight. And as far as I'm concerned, when I'm looking at UConn, they got one chance. 2 chances, actually. 2 chances. One, collectively speaking, they are going to have to defend Michigan on the perimeter. The one thing that Michigan has in their 3 losses this year, because they're 36-3 on the season. The one thing Michigan and their 3 losses have in common is when you get out against them and you pressure them, all right, and you make stuff happen. The one thing that has to be said that this cannot get around is that you have to look at Michigan and say to yourself, if we could do something to prevent them, if we could do something to prevent them from shooting the ball from the perimeter effectively, that puts them in a bind, and offensively they get rattled because of that, and as a result, they're not themselves. That's where their 3 losses came from. Now, they've struggled in other games offensively and still managed to win 36 games. They only got 3 losses on the season. But if you can pressure them defensively and make it uncomfortable for them to hit perimeter shots, and they struggle from the perimeter, I got news for you. You can beat Michigan. You can beat Michigan, especially if you're a Danny Hurley coach team. 18-1 in the NCAA tournament over the last 4 years. 6-0 all-time in NCAA championship games, all since 1999 under 3 different head coaches, Jim Calhoun, Kevin Ollie, and Dan Hurley now. NCAA tournament history, minimum 20 games, highest winning percentage by any head coach. John Wooden, all-time, 47-10, 82.5%. Second is Danny Hurley at 20-5 at UConn in Rhode Island. The man can coach. He's 5-0 in Final Fours. All right? National championships, 2-0. Last 4 tournaments, 18-1. Overall record, 20-5. That's Danny Hurley. And if anybody can figure it out and milk as much as he can out of his own team, it's him. Caravan, he's got to play better. Michigan's going to need, UConn's going to need all the help they can get against Michigan. Mullins, what you going to do in this game? Rolling off those screens, looking like Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. You going to do that tonight? You're going to need to. But the key to UConn is Terrace Reed Jr., former Michigan center. Breakout season in UConn. Averaging career best in almost every statistical category. And he's a big boy. They're going to need that big boy against Michigan, against Mara. Emerez Johnson and the Coup. They going to need that big boy. Terrace Reed is the key. And it's not just about him playing effectively. He can't get in foul trouble. UConn has nobody to spell for him. He can't get in foul trouble. This biggest game of his life against his former team. It seems to have all the ingredients there where even though Michigan is the best team, we've seen where the best team hasn't won a national championship. I go back to Villanova versus Georgetown. Okay, We've seen plenty of competition. I've gone back to Duke UNLV. We've seen instances where the best team in the nation didn't necessarily win a national championship. That certainly could happen tonight. I'm not ruling out that possibility. But if I got to bet my money, it ain't going to be on Dan Hurley and UConn. I can't do it. Not against this Michigan squad. Not against these brothers, these Rough Riders. Now, UConn, they've already defeated BYU, Illinois, Florida, Kansas, and St. John's during the regular season. Michigan State, Duke, and Illinois in the NCAA tournament. And that kid Wagler for Illinois, special. But going up against UConn wasn't enough. Solo Ball is expected to be available. So that's good news. Caravan's the heartbeat of the Huskies. Won titles with UConn in 23 and 24. And has accumulated a school record of 126 victories in his career. Damari led the Big East in assists. Shoots 40.5% from three-point range. Solo Ball is averaging 12.9 points per game. He's expected to be available. Lindenborg, despite his injury, saying no way in hell he's missing the national championship game tonight. So we'll see what happens with that. In the end, what it comes down to is this. You're going to need all the help you can get. UConn is clearly not the favorites. It is Michigan. And just as an aside, I got to tell you, it was a good feeling to see the Fab Five together at the national championship game, appearing on TBS, if I remember correctly. I think that's what it was, instead of TNT. Jimmy King, Ray Jackson, Jalen Rose, Chris Webber, Juwan Howard. Seeing them all there together is a beautiful thing. And if you want to usurp the mystique, and even though nobody will usurp the cultural impact the Fab Five had on college basketball, on the college basketball landscape, ultimately under Steve Fisher, five freshmen starting and going to the national championship game both years, losing to North Carolina, getting blown out by Duke. The bottom line, not in that order though, bottom line is that seeing them together was a good feeling. I'm always going to have love for those brothers and what they meant to the college basketball landscape, forever etched indelibly in the minds of college basketball lovers everywhere. The baggy shorts, the look, the way they affected the culture. You, any team from Michigan. Remember, last time Michigan won the national championship was 1989, Glenn Rice and the crew. So you have to remember that ever since then, they've been to the Final Four about four times. They've been to a national championship game at least three of those times. They've lost every time. The only way you're going to usurp the mystique of the Fab Five to a point where you deserve just as much, if not more, credibility is if you deliver the chip. Michigan knows that, Lindenborg and those boys know that. It's all about the Fab Five all day, every day, unless you are going to win the national championship. They know that. Triple A Mad Dog 6 is always the number to call. It's 888-623-3646. You're listening live to the Stephen A. Smith Show. Sirius XM, Mad Dog Sports Radio. Bruce Pearl, again, will be on 30 minutes past hour number one. Let me get into another subject real quick. And that's revisiting the whole LeBron James situation. Because I made, you know, he made news with some of the things he said. I made news with my response. And obviously, a few people weren't comfortable with that. I saw Matt Barnes from All the Smoke podcast, you know, talking on social media, not in the most flattering fashion of ways, I might say, about yours truly, but that's all right. I'll address him later on my own YouTube show. I won't even get into all of that right now. What I will say is this about LeBron James. I disagreed with his comments about Memphis. But let's be very, very clear. I disagreed with the venue in which he said what he said and the fact that he was talking about Memphis losing its basketball team. To recap what was said, first, let's hear what LeBron James had to say. When he was on that golf course, yes, I said surrounded by white boys. I'm not backing up on that statement. And this was what he said. And then I'll respond. Take it away, Sean.
41 years old. You think I want to do that? being in Memphis on a random ass Thursday. I'm not like the first guy to even talk about it in the NBA. Like, we all like, you guys have to move. Just go over to Nashville. You got Vanderbilt over there. You got the NASCAR. You got a stadium. Don't they got a hockey team too?
Yeah. Predators.
Predators.
Like,
yeah.
They got everything. Their only chance was in 2003 if they would have won the lottery. Give me that. And I might have pulled a Eli Manning and not showed up.
They're laughing. I'm not condemning LeBron James. I don't think he meant any harm by what he said. Matter of fact, I was critical of Memphis a year ago, talking about their crime statistics, homicide rates, murder rates, theft, violent assault crime, stuff like that, and the numbers, how it needed to move in a different direction. Hell, I even brought up the tech companies and, you know, water in the area being contaminated and how the citizens of Memphis needed to be looked out for better by the local politicians. Mayor Paul Young, I think, has done a great job in moving the city in a forward direction. It's certainly not worse under his stewardship. It definitely is better, although there's obviously a long, long way to go. I also think that part of the reason LeBron said what he said is because as NBA players, you hear all the time about Memphis's facilities. I'm talking about the team, the Grizzlies. You saw Desmond Bane get traded from there, and while he raved about the fans there and the city itself, he lamented the quote-unquote dungeon that they played in on a day-in, day-out basis and how going to Orlando was a breath of fresh air for him. So we understand all of that. And I specifically said that LeBron James wasn't wrong with everything he said. What I got on him about, respectfully, was that the city of Memphis is 63% black. And it would be one thing if you, as a league and as a team, got money for relocation. But you don't get money for relocation. You get money for expansion. So let's say hypothetically that the Memphis Grizzlies are worth $5 billion. Because in today's NBA economy, they might be worth that much. Understand that if they were to sell the team for $5 billion, that money is split amongst the other 29 teams, their board of governors, which usually is made up by their owners. And those dollars are split amongst the other 29 teams. So if you expand it, like there's going to be a team in Vegas and there's going to be a team in Seattle in all likelihood. Well, both of those teams, you're talking about anywhere from $7 to $9 or $10 billion that it's going to cost for a new owner to have a team in those expansion cities, and the money would be split amongst the 30 owners in the league right now. But if you simply relocate, then nobody gets paid, which means what's the advantage? Yes, Nashville might be a better city right now. They're considered a thriving economy. But the reality is that, hey, in the end, what about the city of Memphis? And if they're going to be left hanging, they don't have a baseball team. They don't have a football team. And they're already struggling. So imagine what the departure of its basketball team would do to the local economy and the abundance of African Americans who reside there. So if you're going to talk about it on camera, can we be a bit more serious about it and a bit more focused and direct, even if it's more piercing in articulating our positions? That's all I was saying. I wasn't condemning LeBron James for it at all. I was simply making a point because he is LBJ and it is basketball that he's that we were talking about, that you might want to be a bit more careful. That's all. The whole brouhaha that emanates from it, that's people that's wanting attention. And again, I'll address that later. But that's all I was trying to say. Because he's LeBron. And you want to take that into consideration. And when a city is 63, more than 63% black, I would prefer not to see comments like that from somebody black to a whole bunch of white folks that might not even care about Memphis. I'm not saying that they do or don't. I'm saying that might not. Optically speaking, I didn't think it looked good. That's my personal opinion. That's it. I'm not budging from it. I stand by it. I meant what I said. But I wasn't trying to be vitriolic or anything like that, because even though it's a serious issue that involves sensitivity, I'm not trying to accuse LeBron or anybody else for being quote unquote insensitive. I'm just saying guard against that when you're talking about it, because my God, what if the city did lose its team? It would ravage them. LeBron is not the only NBA player that's talked about this. Draymond Green has talked about Memphis. Kevin Durant has talked about Memphis. Other guys in the NBA have talked about Memphis, because obviously they are part of the community. They go there and visit them once, twice, three times a year. Not to mention, these NBA players are their contemporaries. And because they're contemporaries, you know they talk about it. You saw what Desmond Bane said once he arrived in Orlando. To the fair, in fairness, Ja Morant, who's still on the Memphis Grizzlies, has spoke up about Memphis on behalf of Memphis. I didn't hate on that. He has every right to. It makes perfect sense. Especially the way those fans have supported the Memphis Grizzlies team. They're right to love the city. They're right to speak up for the citizens and the sports town that it is. But in the times that we're living in, an upgrade may be necessary. I understand that. But that's all anybody was saying. I say all of that to say, in no way, if I wanted to and I meant to condemn LeBron James, you would know. Disagreeing or saying that somebody, yo, bro, you might want to be careful how you handle this situation because of certain things. I think if I meant to be vitriolic and acerbic and go to hell off, you'd know. That's not what I was doing. That's not what I was doing. I want to do that because he doesn't deserve that over Memphis any more than the other players deserved it over Memphis, because what they were saying wasn't necessarily a lie. It's just that the matter is getting serious, because with expansion and with other teams, you know, advocating for relocation, you just got to ask yourself, what if Memphis lost its team? When all the things that we lamented talking about the city like I did last year has improved under Paul Young. All the numbers are dropping. In terms of crime, theft, et cetera, assaults, murders, homicides, all of those numbers are dropping. It's going in the right direction. But economically speaking, there's still a long way to go. If you lose the basketball team, who knows what kind of effect that would have on everybody? I was just pointing it out and saying that all of us are required to be a bit more careful as we're talking about the city of Memphis moving forward. That's it. 888-MAD-DOG-6 is always the number to call up. That's 888-623-3646. Like I said, Mr. Matt Barnes from All the Smoke Podcast went on social media talking about what I said and used that as an excuse to go into an area that he doesn't realize I'm more than comfortable addressing. Ain't nobody backing up. I can assure you I'm not. And I will address him and what he had to say a little bit later on my YouTube show. Look for it. Certain things are meant for certain platforms. And certain things are not. And what I'm going to talk about and the manner in which I'm going to talk about it, it ain't necessary to do that on this sports show, on the Mad Dog channel. But anywhere else, it's open season. They ain't the only ones that got something to say. I got something to say, too. 888-MAD-DOG-6888-623-3646. The one and only Bruce Pearl, college basketball analyst extraordinaire. He's up next right here with Stephen A., SiriusXM, Mad Dog Sports Radio.